is 1UP Network Radio, and you're listening to the 1UP Yours podcast. I'm your host, Garnet Lee. Got my partner in crime, John Davis, in with me.
I could be playing Oblivion right now.
We may. Let's go. Both of us can go do that, right? Hey, we got a pretty good show lined up for you today. So in the first block, we're going to be talking about, like we usually do, what you've been playing. We're going to hit some reader mail. We've got a little introduction of our new news guy, Mr. Luke Smith. And he has a really cool story to tell us about his trip here. In the second part of the story, we'll be talking about, will Microsoft do a handheld console? Yeah, we've got plenty to say about that. And then in the final segment, we'll be talking about some Nintendo news. So moving on, let's let our two guests here introduce themselves.
I'm Luke Smith from 1UP News.
And I'm Darren Gladstone, senior editor over at CGW.
All right, so let's dive right in. Darren, what you been playing, man?
Okay, can we get the Oblivion, the obvious Oblivion stuff out of the way? Because everyone's playing that.
We all want to talk about it. What do you mean obvious? We actually like the game. You don't like it?
Oh, I love the game. I need a life. I gotta pull out for 5 minutes. I've been looting there's a one man crime spree going on in my world right now.
You're living the medieval gangsta life.
That's how I roll. Bitches.
So you're playing something other than Oblivion? I mean, you said you wanted to get it out of the way and get to the other stuff. What else are you? What else is there right now?
Well, I'll tell you. Actually, after going to GDC last week, I was really inspired to go back because I love checking out independent games, and the IGF competition over at GDC really inspired me this year. There's a lot of really cool stuff. I was a big fan of Darwinia. I got a chance to take a sneak peek at their new game, DEFCON, which is coming out, which is basically it's like global thermonuclear war for war games. Totally.
It's
I'm
like
playing
the
Whopper,
Whopper,
man. Let me see. Cell Factor. Did you guys check that one out when you were there? Basically, think PsyOps first-person shooter.
Okay. Okay, that's kind of cool.
Using AGF physics, fully manipulate the environment, looked really cool. It was only a demo for now, but that looked pretty
sweet. What are you actually playing?
Oblivion.
Right. Oh!
I twist his arm.
Well, yeah. I just wanted to throw
look
some props
at me.
In.
Look at my cred. I know all the independent stuff. I'm playing Oblivion.
Yeah. Well... Yeah, I had to at least get that out of the way.
Like, I'm a really big fan of
that's how Darren rolls. He's always got to do the whole, I got some credibility, but yeah.
I have no credibility whatsoever. I'm covering
Jeez, heartless.
Well, we got through that. We burned through that pretty quick. So, Luke, jump out in the fire.
I'm not really playing much of anything because I drove across the country the week that GDC was because I moved from Detroit to San Francisco to come to this job. So the whole thing about the interesting story, really the first part of the story is not that interesting because it's driving through states that start with the letter I, and there's no difference between Indiana, Illinois, or Iowa. It's the same state over and over with like different interstate colors, like different street side colors. It's ridiculous. So I get to Nebraska, the grail of states, and my first night in Nebraska, I crash in Lincoln, and it's all over the weather that there's some big snowstorm coming, and I'm thinking, of course, I'm from Michigan. I was born in northern Michigan, which is like the frozen tundra of the Midwest.
You know snow.
I know snow. Me and the Ford Contour know snow. Like two-wheel drive up front, it's almost like there are chains on the tires. So I roll out of bed, and the lady at the counter's like, "It's going to be dangerous out there, son. Be careful." And I was like, "I'm from Michigan." So I
think you walked into some kind of weird movie now.
Yeah, it was. So I'm driving on I-80 West, leaving Lincoln, heading toward Kearney. And the road gets really bad.
Oh, yeah, the road to Kearney.
The road to Kearney, yep. Totally. And so it starts to get a little bit snowy, and I'm on the phone, of course, because when you're driving through inclement weather, the best thing to do is to be on the cell phone. And I decide that I'm going to pull off. So just as I'm about to pull off the road, I'm like 7 exits away. In front of me, there's a semi-truck, and in between the semi and I is like another winter weather vehicle, the Mazda Protege. So it's a semi, a Mazda Protege, and the Ford Contour. The semi-truck starts to jackknife under an overpass, and it's all actually happening in slow motion because everyone's driving at 30 miles per hour. And the semi-truck jackknifes. The Mazda Protege, for whatever reason, swings the e-brake so that his passenger side window comes out across. Like, his passenger side window comes to my frame of vision where did the driver have
this
a wide...
This is radio. I mean, we've had this problem sometimes before. This is radio. They don't see your hands maneuvering.
Yeah, it's like... So you're looking at the passenger of this car. They swerved totally the wrong way.
Were they cute?
No. Oh. No, this is... It's Nebraska.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh. Corn fed.
Yeah, so I have to navigate between the two cars. So I hit the semi-truck. So now I'm stuck in Minden, Nebraska for like the next 3 days, missing GDC, arriving at 1UP significantly late with a car that's like limping across the country the rest of the way.
So now that you're here, what do you think of the city? Were the rumors true?
The city's great. It's just a lot of places to go. And it's the whole thing is like, I haven't really got a chance to go out and look through a whole lot of the city because it's like work, stalk Craigslist, and then work.
Yeah, it sounds pretty San Franciscan. Mm-hmm. I'll buy into that.
Sure.
So what are you going to play then? What do you want to play that you're going to start into then?
I'm actually going to play Oblivion.
Oh, Jesus.
a friend of mine.
Clean sweep.
A friend of mine, when he heard that I was driving across the country and wasn't going to be able to pick up the special edition, went and picked it up for me, and he's mailing it to the office here. So.
Nice. Nice. Do you have anything you want to add about the Oblivions?
I'm playing Oblivion. I'm also playing Brain Age every morning.
What's your age down to?
27.
That's it. I think I read this morning that that's what Iwata's brain age is.
Oh, well, fantastic.
So I feel a little bit better.
If only Milky were here to help us out with the...
The DS is out on the kitchen counter, and every morning me and my wife grab it and do the little five-minute training thing.
See,
and the test. And
I wasn't there. I was here typing all that stuff in, and I can't get my hands on one because everybody likes it. So that's definitely a hit for the Game Boy coming up. Or for the DS.
DS, yeah.
Properly name it. Definitely a hit because I can't pry one out of any of the editor's hands, and there's a ton of copies floating around this office. Mm-hmm. So that's a pretty good sign. Usually, if there's something floating around the office...
We're all becoming vastly more intelligent than you now.
Yeah, well, that was a big jump.
The gap is widening.
Ah, my name's Doofus. what do you want us to hit next? You want us to get into some of that there reader mail? So first one we have here is from NMA.
God.
We'll just leave that right there. That's what it says right here. Instead of the console wars, who do you think is winning the third-party war? And in their opinion, it's Ubisoft.
Define winning.
Coming out with more consistently good games? Is that
yeah, so, let's, so I guess if you're going to say sales, there's EA and then there's everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So and I think a lot of times people just cruise right past EA because it's gotten so big it's seen almost as that same plateau. But let's talk about quality because who cares about sales?
Right.
Sales, whatever. I mean, we don't have to worry about sales. We're gamers.
In terms of quality, I think Ubisoft's definitely up there.
Yeah, Ubisoft's definitely
up there. I'd have to agree. They're consistently coming out with pretty good titles, and they're taking some chances that a lot of guys aren't doing.
So speaking of taking chances, what do you think about them buying the Far Cry license and the Crytek engine?
Well, I mean, it's kind of ironic considering how, you know, the Crytek guys pretty much, took off and bailed.
To EA.
To EA, of all places. And it's going to be interesting to see what they can do with the engine.
Yeah, so I guess the engine itself is already starting to be behind the curve, wouldn't you say?
That's exactly it. I mean, like the new engine being used for Crysis looks amazing.
Awesome.
Yeah, it was like one of the big things people were talking about at GDC.
So now they have this license for Far Cry, which was, I mean, as an IP, what do you think?
Yeah,
that's kind of my response too.
It was nice, but I don't think it really made an impact, did it?
Spoiler alert for Far Cry, the original. By the time you got to the end and the monkeys with rocket launcher arms.
And really, monkeys with rocket launchers? Awesome.
I didn't play all the way through. I watched other people that were around me playing it, and I thought it looked nice. It did have a bit of Turok about it.
A bit. Yeah, a bit.
Just a hint.
Just a smidge. At least it wasn't Trespasser.
This is true.
Okay, so Ubi, who else is a player in that game space?
Well, with Oblivion, I guess we've got to say 2K.
2K does have a lot of lineup out there now.
Yeah. They got Bioshock, too.
Yeah, and the Sid Meier stuff. And
yeah, so they've got a bunch of stuff coming for Firaxis, who they've rolled into the company. And the 2K sports line is pretty solid, usually.
THQ's got a pretty interesting lineup coming up. I mean, obviously, the company heroes they could talk about, but in Titan Quest.
Yeah, well, you know I'm loving the Titan Quest. Oh, my gosh, man. I'm so in love with that. Yeah. So, yeah, we're definitely working on trying to get you some of that.
I want my copy back of that.
There are four more copies in your office.
I don't care.
Okay. Anyway, so I guess we kind of decided there's EA, and then there's Ubi doing some great stuff. And EA has been taking more risks, and they say they want to take more risks.
Well, if they want to take risks, do it without a movie license. Let's try something like fresh and original, please.
Absolutely. We're all about that. Next up, next one's from Urban Nomad. Urban says, which games, franchises, IPs do you want to see make a comeback on next-gen systems?
Bionic Commando.
Word. Okay.
Bionic
awesome.
Commando is like my first choice as far as games that I want to see return. You sort of had something similar to it with Ninja 5-0. Like the gameplay was pretty similar, but just a raw redux of Bionic Commando is something I would kill to see made.
I'd say Shadowrun on both the Genesis and the SNES. I love those games, and I'm just a dork for the FASA series. So
was that really as good as we all think it was, though?
Maybe I'm just looking at it with rose-tinted glasses from the past, but I just love the idea behind it.
I really like System Shock, and And is BioShock really kind of picking up the mantle there?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
it's a different kind of vibe, though, right?
Well, it's definitely it's an evolution of the vibe for sure. But
if we're gonna go down, you know, a little more obscure lanes, I would do almost anything to get the next chapter of Anachronox. I mean,
yeah, you know what? That was a fun game for the time. It was unfortunate timing, though.
Well, you know, it just took so long because they were using the
Unreal.
The Unreal 1 engine, and building that into a almost Final Fantasy style RPG. But boy, it was a good game.
And I have a taste for sort of Western RPGs again now, and I'm remembering Ultima Underworld 2 really fondly. Mm-hmm. It'd be nice to go back to that world rather than, I mean, Ultima itself got a bit stodgy, but the Underworld games really had something special about them.
Yeah, actually, I'm noticing a theme here. Like, it's like all of us were kind of like digging these, like, you know, single player RPGs. It seems like, you know, maybe like Oblivion and coming back out there, pushing it to the forefront.
Yeah,
I think guys are really like kind of looking to those again now and wanting to bring them back.
The pendulum,
definitely.
The pendulum should be swinging back in that direction. I think that we've seen sort of the evolution and like the explosion of MMOs. Now that pendulum of it's good to play with other people, maybe in terms of RPGs, is going to start swinging back to it's good to play by yourself.
You know, actually, have you guys checked out Age of Conan at all from Funcom?
Not yet, no.
They got a really cool idea they're doing. Basically, it's a single player game for the first 20 levels. You create your hero. And then once you finish the single-player game, you could take that character online into this MMO world.
Wasn't Phantasy Star going to do that? There was some talk of that at one point as well. I don't know. I mean, it's a nice idea on paper. Sounds really annoying in, like, practice, though.
It really does sound a little bit odd. Sound cool on paper, so we'll be interested to see how that
works. Yeah, I mean, I'm curious to see how it plays out myself.
But with new consoles, especially a new PlayStation coming out, I started thinking about, like, cotton candy games. Whatever happened to Jet Moto? I would actually dig.
Yeah, that was actually a good physics engine on that.
Jet Moto 1, I mean, okay, so I didn't, the kind of, I guess, 989, it fell down with 989, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, pretty much. Actually, you know, here, another obscure one, I'll just throw out there really quick. Anyone here remember Rocket Jockey from Sega Soft?
Mm-mm.
Way too obscure? Okay, I'm alone on that one. But look it up on MobyGames.com or something, it's actually pretty cool. It was like rocket racing and...
I think he's making it up.
I think he is totally making it up.
Okay, I'm just going to... Yeah, I'll see you later.
All right, so our last question is from VicViperX3. Are online rental services like Gamefly hurting the industry? I've been a Gamefly member since November of 2003, and I can tell you that my game purchases have dropped to less than half of what they were before Gamefly, and what are our thoughts on that?
Do we think it's hurting?
Hurting? No, I don't think it hurts
at
all.
More games.
Yeah, get to play more games.
I think that's awesome.
And those companies buy a lot of games that people then rent. I think there's some interesting stuff right now about what's hurting the industry. There was an editorial this morning about how World of Warcraft is probably the most responsible because people are burning all their game time on that.
Right.
Yeah.
I got another question for Vic. Hey, Vic, if you were paying $30 for a game instead of $50 or $60, how many more would you be buying?
Right.
I mean, we've had this discussion a bunch of times, but you cannot really go mainstream at a $50 or $60 price
point. I dropped $70 on Oblivion. In fact, it was more than that with Amazon's ridiculous shipping charges. I think I spent $80 to get Oblivion.
Well, you probably had to have it next day.
I didn't.
I didn't.
It turned up on the 28th.
Okay, actually, let me ask. Did you get anything? I know there's a coin and some kind of like...
And a book and a DVD.
Do you get anything? Like, is the DVD worth it?
The DVD is really good, actually. It's like a 40-minute documentary.
Ryan was really digging on it.
It's focused on them preparing for E3 and like the demo showed there. And it's like, it's really cool. And there's lots of different, it's not just like one guy talking over game. I mean, it's like a really good quality documentary.
Okay, like behind the scenes stuff. That's cool.
All right, so that sounds like a wrap-up for this week's Reader Mail. Don't forget to send us in your questions. Skip will get them forwarded to us, and we'll do them here. Coming up after the break, we're going to get into a Microsoft handheld. Listening to the One Up Yours podcast on the One Up Radio Network. We know you have ears because you're listening to this show, but you also have eyes, and you might want to check out this little thing we'd like to call the One Up Show. You may have heard of it, you may not have heard of it, but if you have or haven't, you should check it out. It has its own space in our network as well. It's put on by Ryan O'Donnell and the rest of the fabulous video team here, so give us a watch, the One Up Show. And we're back. All right, guys, we're going to talk about some handheld Xbox Microsoft action, because what could be better than a smartphone than a X-boy? What the hell? All right, how did this all get started? tell me about this guy. He's from the Mercury News, right?
Dean Takahashi?
Yeah. And he writes this whole thing, and it's going to be the X-Boy. Came out from his book. Wow, surprise, he's promoting a book. What's your thoughts on the book there, Mr. Smith?
It's his second book, right?
Yeah.
The second book, he's returning to that well of Microsoft Xbox bookie goodness.
he's opening the Xbox again.
The second Xbox.
Well, maybe he's opening the bottom of the box.
And you know what's popping out is an X-Boy.
Oh, yes, an X-Boy.
It's like a Russian doll.
They're going to do one, though, right? I mean...
yeah, I was on the way to the bus today, I was just thinking, you know, like a PSP in one pocket, a DS in the other. Like, I've got a back left pocket for an X-Boy if they could just stuff a little bit more portable gaming.
Wait, do you want them to do one?
I couldn't care one way or the other, but I think they're going to.
Yeah, I mean, Sorry, Microsoft. I really don't give a shit if you make this thing or not. I mean, I hate to tell you that, but I've got handheld. DS does it right. PSP is still trying to figure it out. Microsoft, if you're going to spend some money, invest in games for the 360 heavily. Take whatever dollars you're thinking of making some piece of hardware with.
It's a logical extension of the whole XNA thing, though. It's like another platform that's easy to develop. I mean, you know, because they want to dominate. They want to own like they want to do in every market. So... It's the gaping hole in their lineup right now.
Yeah, I mean, if I were to make one, I would make it without an optical drive. That's for damn sure.
Okay. Yeah, because digital, it'd be like an iPod. It's going to be all digital download.
Okay.
All media.
Plug it right into your Xbox 360 and you can like, download games
stuff
into
across.
It.
Xbox One level of power, probably.
Portable Geometry Wars.
Yeah,
okay,
baby.
You can't argue with that.
Suddenly
you
know what? They
could, suddenly, it doesn't sound so bad.
If they really want to get in this market, they could just rebrand the Gizmondo. I bet they could pick that up. They could pick that up pretty cheap. No. Slap a Windows logo on it.
Well, actually, it wasn't Windows. It was running off Windows CE.
Oh, awesome! It's already there.
It's going to be the whole Microsoft digital download thing that we talk about every other week.
Yeah, I mean, actually, so in his article, he actually brought that up. What did he call it? It was great. He said he referenced their music service because they're going to have
Alexandria?
This music service, Alexandria.
That doesn't really roll off the tongue to me. Like, hey, did you get that new track off of Alexandria? Like, it sounds like you're licking it off of a beautiful woman.
Dude, you cannot touch my girlfriend.
Dude. Sorry.
Actually, it suddenly doesn't sound that bad. That
should be the marketing plan.
Alexandria is kind of a name for a hot girl.
It's kind of like a stripper.
Just like a silhouette teams. With a music note, you know,
yeah.
A licking spot.
Ooh.
Kind of like
yeah.
One benefit.
Just great around.
Luke already. He's like dovetailed right into the mix immediately. Anyone who can hang outside Milky's office and deal with the jams.
Dude, it was Journey. Like, what do you need to restart the night at 7 p.m.? Journey. And then you know what we did after that? Wham.
We did. Oh. We
Wham.
Were.
Did you
bam,
wake it up?
We were a man last night.
There you were.
Every song needs woo-woos.
Yes.
So, you know, I don't know. So I'm still not completely convinced about a handheld. Because, look, right now what I'd like is... I'm kind of torn because you carry... So we were talking about phones earlier, and I think this kind of relates to the whole thing because cell phone games keep pushing forward the cell phone technology mm-hmm. to the... I mean, Nokia tried the N-Gage, but they've abandoned it. And even in abandoning it, they're basically saying that their hardware that they're putting out now in phones is basically capable of doing most of the games in that portable sense.
Actually, I might have to catch on that one. They're not abandoning it. They're kind of refining it. And as much as goofy as their strategy has been so far, they're actually coming out with another N-Gage. It actually doesn't look like total crap, and I wouldn't mind using.
Right. So I guess the better way to say it is they're bringing the N-Gage back into the phone fold to make it more of a phone that has
right.
that capability.
It's their gaming platform rather than a gaming phone.
Exactly.
It represents something different.
Right, and in a phone now, I mean, I'm definitely interested in having a Windows 5 phone so that I could have all those other functionality. Is that closer maybe to what they want to do? Because I really don't need another handheld. I really don't.
I don't need or necessarily want another handheld. And at the same time, like, my phone's like the phone that Zach Morris uses. Like, it's this giant, archaic, crusty cell phone. So I don't know how it's going to serve me either way.
And that's not said with any hate, because Microsoft seems, when they come into spaces like the Xbox, want to compete on a technology-for-technology basis. So if they come in trying to, you know, make this unearthly, badass, portable handheld that's better than the PSP, that seems to me to ignore all the lessons that PSP's learned in its first year.
Well, I think that, I mean... While I really could care less one way or the other, as long as the applications are there that are interesting, I think that there's no one perfect device for any one person.
Okay.
So, I mean, like, John uses the Trio. I have a Sidekick 2. You know,
right.
Luke, you have, like, apparently a
The Zach Morris.
Yeah. What's the Zach Morris?
You call on radio strikes on this crank up phone or something?
Yeah, well, Zach Morris, and they'll say by the bell, had this giant.
And
that's like that's what my cell phone is. I just have this giant, you know, Nokia Chongo that I use.
But I don't have any interest in playing Halo on a handheld. You know? And first, I mean, the PSP proves that the more complicated and 3D the games get, the less interested you are in playing them. I mean, on my trio, I play Bookworm.
Yep. And the most excited I've been about the PSP since Lumens is Loco Roco.
Right.
Okay, I totally play Mega Man Powered Up.
Okay.
But that's the first thing for me. That's the first application. The first game for the PSP where I've been like...
Well, big time 3D games are not where the handheld space is.
Exactly. All the games that I've been digging are like, let me see, Exit and... You know, the controls are a little wonky, but Katamari is...
Very colorful, very bright. So I still have skipped the review for our one-up on this, but Splinter Cell on the PSP absolutely drove me nuts because it's very nice that they can technically do it, but it has no business being on that console.
Right.
Just doesn't work.
Also, a really dark game on a game that has a really dark screen.
Oh, my God, it's horrible.
That's not fun.
Yeah, it's so dark. And so someone actually sent me a note asking if it had the voices of Michael Ironside, and it does have. It does have all the voice work. It's amazing everything they crammed into that. That still doesn't make it a good game. And I think that's the lesson that Xbox better or Microsoft better pay attention to before they start coming into the space and thinking, oh, we'll make this incredibly awesome machine and everyone will want to have one because they won't care because they've already learned.
You know what? I'd say if they made a device that just let me download stuff from Xbox Live Arcade.
Yeah,
that would be cool.
If I could join the Blast Club and just like, you know, play that on a handheld or Geometry Wars or whatever else they have coming up. That
would be
more compelling.
Cool. And maybe pull a page from the Nintendo book and have connectivity with the 360. Use it as a controller or some kind of interface with the game machine. That I could see.
Yeah.
And that would actually be something that the cost wouldn't be astronomical on.
Oh, okay. Sure, yeah.
Connectivity, still the future of gaming.
Ooh, we're going to be all interconnected, yo. So I think we're pretty much wrapped up on that. Anyone have any last parting shots on the portable Xbox?
Is there a date for it yet?
Yeah, out in 2007, whatever. I mean, I guess it depends on when they decide to announce it. Do you think they're going to show this thing at E3?
No.
Absolutely not.
No, they're still trying to get the hype up about it at 360.
Yeah. And I mean, back to what I originally said, I would much rather see them focusing their intention on getting great software out. I really don't care what box I play on. I really don't care. I just want good games. And that's where, the last part of Microsoft is soft, as in they're a software company. Let's see the software, guys. Let's put the same effort and attention into great games and the Microsoft Game Studios that you put into developing Vista. And I'm not a Microsoft hater.
It's on a kind of a negative tear today. Like
wrong side of the bed.
Yeah. It was the satch, man. I'm telling you. Today was the satch. That's like, what got it started.
Last week we were kind of jolly. This week it's... Get off my lawn,
jolly,
kids.
Like fatigue.
Yeah.
Little spent.
Yeah.
This is angry.
It was hangovers last week. So today, smash. I started the whole day today with the mystical potato head groove thing. And by the way, since we've done that before, that's what needs to be in Guitar Heroes. I want to see Satriani in Guitar Heroes.
Surfing with the Alien.
Yeah. Mystical potato head groove thing.
Okay.
Yeah, it's jams. All right. So we got one more piece coming up here after the break. We'll be getting into some Nintendo stuff and we'll catch you then. You're listening to the One Up Yours podcast on the One Up Radio Network. If you like what you're listening to on the One Up Yours podcast, we also do other shows on the One Up Radio Network, including the recently started CGW podcast. You might want to check that out. It's run by CGW's own Mr. Jeff Green, and he is the authoritative source in the community for PC games info. So give it a listen and check it out. We're back for the last half of the show here, or the final third of the show, I guess, really is what it is, isn't it? And we're going to hit into some Revolution stuff, because IGN leaked some specs on the, I guess the buzzword now is GameCube 1.5, right? Okay, ha 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 ha. How silly is it even call it GameCube 1.5, because the Revolution isn't really about the hardware, so it seems silly to talk about the hardware, but okay, so let's throw it out there. What do you guys think of the specs?
Why
are we talking about the specs on the machine? Who cares?
I think everyone's expecting that to be a sort of baseline of power on this next gen, and you know, but ultimately isn't it somewhat irrelevant
when it comes to Nintendo's games? I'd agree. I mean, it seems like a lot of their stuff just kind of defies like worrying about the highest end 3D hardware.
The revolution was never about the hardware. So making a big ta-da over the specs is just kind of crazy. Okay, so here's like the comparison that Skip put together for us. So the Broadway CPU runs, 729 megahertz. So right now the GameCube's at 485, but we all know like the Xbox has the 733, what was it, Celeron core, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. Celeron?
I think so.
Yeah, something like that. Pentium 3 class, right?
You know, the thing is, like, just, you know, not to geek out too much here, but you know, CPU speeds are always relative. I mean, like, AMD processors run
exactly.
slower than Intel processors, so, I mean, that's kind of... Mm-hmm.
So you have to know short instruction set, long instruction set, yeah. all that kind of stuff.
And it's then... it's more powerful than the GameCube, I think. I mean, isn't
that's
that
the
all that really
part,
matters?
Yeah.
And it's, so even if it's just on a par with the Xbox, does anyone really have a problem with the Xbox right now?
No, not really.
I mean, I was just upstairs working on, I'm playing Dreamfall because I'm reviewing that, and I was thinking to myself, okay, it doesn't look like a 360 game, but it certainly doesn't look bad. It doesn't look bad by any stretch. It's not hurting my immersion into the game world at all. So,
people are still playing PS2 games, and it doesn't look that great today, you know, by most standards today.
Yeah, I mean, people continue to play PS2 after the Xbox came out, and even games where you could say, oh, well, there's a definite jump in visual fidelity. It wasn't like you went, oh, well, okay, I'm throwing my PS2 away.
Do we know if the revolution is HD?
No, we don't. That's one thing that still hasn't been talked about, really. We don't know whether it's going to be HD or not.
I'm going to guess 480p as well.
Yeah, I think 480p would be a safe bet. That way, at least you're standard into, like, you know, the baseline of the next generation of television screens we'll be watching.
But, I mean, isn't it like, you know, HD is going to be kind of standard TV starting in, what, 2008 now or something
yeah.
like that? Or?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, within this next generation of consoles. So
right.
I mean, it kind of makes sense to at least have a baseline of 480p.
I would think so. And some output, you know, some different connectivity options as far as what kind of output connectors there are on the back of it. I mean, I guess the lead I kind of closed down the conversation with, because it seems like we all agree.
Thanks, Garnett.
Sorry.
Yeah, that was a really productive segment.
Wow, that's great.
Thanks. Let's just listen to what Garnett thinks, shall we?
It's the Garnett Show. Hi.
That's another podcast that I have.
I broadcast
myself at home.
No one really
seems to listen to it. I can't even get my wife to listen to it.
I think Nintendo are doing more interesting things than talking about their hardware or not talking about their hardware.
Exactly.
I think the Iwata talking about the price of games being under $50 is a significant thing.
Very much.
They've been saying a lot lately, and it escapes me now. You have a list. What else did we say he was talking about?
Actually, I don't have that list here.
Software. I mean, just
no party. That was it. And then, of course, the other quote that we have here was Mark Rain saying, "Well, you probably won't be seeing the Unreal 3 engine on the Revolution." And I guess I would be saying.
Okay.
So, I mean, you're going to get the Unreal Engine everywhere else, pretty much?
Yeah,
your
pretty
PC,
much.
Your PC, 360, PS3, they're all going to be able to handle, so you're missing out on the Unreal Engine.
Okay. Right. He says that, and somewhere Iwata's going, exactly.
Well, I don't know that thing. So, I mean, I guess everyone hears the Unreal Engine, and they think, okay, it's just going to be used for first-person shooters. It's being used for a lot of other games, too.
But it's also, I mean, it's a benchmark now. I mean, we've seen what it can do, kind of. And I think if that's what people's perception of next gen is, by Mark Rain saying that Revolution won't do it, it is changing people's perception of what that box can do.
Do you think that Nintendo's going to miss people's perception or their possible perception of what next gen is? Do you think?
I think they're going to try really hard not to position that way. I think it's definitely going to be more of a, you know, that cute little entertainment box as opposed to. Look at these gigantic immersive worlds.
I agree.
The 64 was the last box that they really tried to position as a technical powerhouse, right?
Mm-hmm.
And certainly they weren't positioning the GameCube in that way.
No.
Well, I think they realize their strength is in their unique software. And they just keep playing that angle.
I'm actually more interested as to what it is that we're going to download all these old games onto. I mean, they haven't said anything about storage. They haven't said, you know, it's just this box that's plugged in. Is it going to be... How's it going to work?
Well, considering how anal they are about DRM rights and security,
yeah.
I can only imagine it's going to be like maybe a hard drive in a totally locked box.
We're going to stream them, essentially?
Well,
it is possible.
Yeah.
Maybe you have an account, and once you're logged in, it has record of what you've purchased, and when you want to play...
Everything they're uploading is tiny. I mean,
right.
You know, it'll fit on a memory stick on anything else, so...
Or you wouldn't even... Yeah, or you could just have internal memory such that when you wanted to play... Bomberman or whatever, you simply, you know, accessed Bomberman and it streamed it back down to your machine and you were ready to play again.
There are plenty of digital download services that let you do that right now.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's...
Speaking of Bomberman, but not speaking of Nintendo, San Bomberman on Xbox Live. Yeah.
Yeah.
Rock and roll.
Was that confirmed?
No, it wasn't confirmed. They said that it was something that they were considering and something that certain people in the development team would like to work on, but that they were in no way, shape, or form working on it currently. They said they were pretty clear, I think, in the story that Patrick wrote, that they were not confirming that they were working on it, but that they were like they wanted to. So,
well, I guess they want to. That's good. Then.
That's at least good that they recognize that that's something that people want.
I would like that.
Tell them.
I would like that.
I would like. I think they heard. They listen. They monitor us through the software, right? Calls back into Microsoft at night. So regardless of what the specs are, I'm excited about the Revolution. I've been excited about the Revolution since the first time we geeked on the whole controller demonstration. First time I heard Mark McDonald talking about, you know, messing with the thing, I was like, wow, that sounds really cool. So, you know, I'm definitely willing to jump into that one and see what they can do with it.
I'm a big fan of Iwata right now because he's thinking just about things being fun. He's not trying to change the world with it, you know?
Yeah, he gave a great speech at GDC. Yeah. It was a lot of fun. He definitely gives a lot of insight.
It was what that crowd needed to hear in the sort of light of what Sony and Microsoft have been going on about lately. It's like, we just want to make experiences that are fun.
It's inspirational when you hear it because you think, wow, this guy is in charge of something and he gets it.
Yep.
Yeah, but he was saying, like, they put together the original Brain Age in, what, 90 days or something?
90 days. And part of the push was you don't have time to complain.
So I like the part where he's talking about how the retailers had to, you know, be engaged and play it.
Yeah, he made them play it for like 15 minutes or something.
Yeah. Well, so they should be involved in it because they should get that what they're doing is supposed to be fun, that the whole thing is supposed to be fun, that, you know, having 733 megahertz processors with certain amount of memory is like you get bored with that stuff. I mean, there's certainly a place for it. There's certainly I am impressed by the technical aspects of games like Oblivion, which we've talked about quite a bit, or what the Unreal 3 engine can do. And I'm excited to see what those things can do. And I'm very happy that 360 and PS3 have it hammered down. So let Revolution not have Unreal 3 and let it do something cool.
Yes.
Precisely.
Exactly.
Indeed.
Again, Garnet summarizes our thoughts.
It's like he's patched in.
Get out
the
of my head.
To our brains.
Well, you guys have the after-lunch slowdowns here, huh?
A little bit, yeah.
All right, well, so let me throw some of the nulls out here. So I read this thing on, where did I pull this from? I pulled this from the LA Times Entertainment News, that a majority of Americans feel that the government has no business regulating broadcast television. And the reason I pulled this story is because I think it's so funny in comparison to the public outcry that, you know, we hear about of getting the government to regulate our games for us.
See, what it is it's okay to watch people dying, but it's not okay to pull the trigger.
Well, actually, the lesson I've learned is it's okay to pull the trigger, but God forbid you try to have sex with someone in a game.
That's true. Yeah, pulling the trigger is not so bad. It is the sex.
Because apparently sex
isn't that
sex
kind
is
of
evil.
The same thing?
The sex?
Pulling the trigger?
Ooh!
Whoa.
Zing.
Yeah, can we get the rim shot? Listen,
I'll add that. See, so I think it's really funny is this was done by a group called the TV Watch. Their survey found that 82% of those polled said they would prefer to see individuals exercising personal choice over what's on their television set than the government stepping in to regulate it. The quote these guys throw out there is that we need to remove the fog of misinformation, hyperbole, and emotions that have been the calling card of a vocal minority pushing the government to become more involved in television regulation. Hello? How similar does that sound to the game business?
Can we just cut out that television part and put in video games? And
why even cut out television? We watch our games on television.
Mm-hmm. I mean, like right now, it seems like the way a lot of people, like channels work around having, you know, like all the great shows are on FX, you know, The Shield
right.
or Rescue Me or whatever. They have no problems, you know, with curse words and nudity on the air.
Well, I mean,
so the listeners go to cable.
Even in the 10 o'clock hour, we see plenty on the major networks. I mean, it's not like they hold back very much, especially not like in the CSI style crime dramas. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's plenty of graphic violence in that.
Yeah, I was pretty much scarred by seeing Dennis Franz naked in NYPD Blue. Mm-hmm. So,
and that was a decade ago.
But you're right.
I was still scarred.
It's not so much the violence as it is the sex stuff that people get so upset about.
Why is that though?
I'm not American.
Wow. That's a great sociological statement.
I don't understand your American ways.
It's because we're all birthed by the Puritans who came over from England to escape those crazy Brits.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
wandering around with our shirts off.
And we wanted to lock it all up and put
you
it
do
in
that here sometimes.
And our pants sometimes.
Only after
like
a couple
right
of pints.
Well, you know, Friday afternoon.
John, get those
know.
Things back on.
Yeah.
All right, so we'll...
That is a mic, right?
Oh,
God. Well, thank you for coming, Darren. We appreciate that. Thank you very much. So that was my absurd news. And then the other part we have to touch on, I suppose, is this whole thing about the UMDs fading off into the sunset.
Is anyone actually surprised by that?
Not in the least.
I wonder if they actually talked to anybody when they said, oh, we're going to make
releasing another format. How do you feel about that?
Yeah.
Because early on, there was like, Hitcher sold 200,000 copies or whatever it was. And now suddenly Walmart's like, we're not selling them. No one's interested.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, in the world of retail, if it's off Walmart shelves, that's the end of it. It's all over. I don't care about what you think about, oh, we're going to relaunch it or whatnot. If it's off the shelf at Walmart, then it's not going to be successful at retail.
So how could it have been made successful? If they were committed to driving the UMD format, how would they have made it successful? By including it as a pack-in when you purchase the regular DVD?
Well, is either that or maybe even at least offering you the opportunity to, even if it's a low resolution, giving you a TV out option somewhere on the PSP so that you can plug it into your TV and watch it.
I still think it goes further than that as well. I think we don't need another damn format.
I agree.
You know, there's like, you know, every device I've got takes a different kind of memory card. You know, my phone uses SD cards. The PSP uses other things. There's DVDs, CD, and like another disc. I just want one universal kind of media thing to put things on.
Well, I think the idea of that kind of disappeared a long time ago.
But you know, you a 2 gig card. I mean, how many gigs on a UMD? Two,
roughly.
I mean, it's not going to be very long before they can put games out on a memory stick.
Well, yeah, and I think they're talking about that now with the next refresh.
And there's already the download. I mean, it's, you know, it's all coming down to eventually it's all going to be downloads.
Oh, I agree. And actually, another thing that could have helped it, the PSP at least, if they actually removed, I mean, Sony is so DRM heavy that they got to basically jump through five hoops if you want to transfer a file over. So I wound
starting
up...
Starting with not including the cable in the box.
Yeah.
Right. Right. So Benjamin Feingold, who's the president of Sony Pictures Home Entertainment, actually, he obviously they have a clue because he says here that they one of the biggest drawbacks for movie watching device was its inability to connect the gadget to TV sets. And at CES 2 years ago, didn't they talk about having home players or at least that functionality built into some DVD players?
Talking about it, but that was like...
They never did it.
No.
No follow through. And then, here's the great quote. This is like the Dr. Obvious quote. I think a lot of people are ripping content and sticking it onto the device rather than purchasing.
No,
really?
Yeah, because I was going to buy five versions of Lord of the Rings so I could like watch it on my home theater and then watch it again on my PSP.
Yeah, we already talked about this 2 weeks ago. How cool was it to see the 8-meg card coming?
Have any of you ever watched a movie on a PSP?
I have once, the one that was packed in with it.
Spider-Man?
At my desk at one of my old jobs.
Okay, you mean on UMD though, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
Same thing.
But from download... Tons of stuff, right?
Well, I would rip DVDs all the time. I'd have to automate the process overnight just in order to get two movies onto memory cards. But mm-hmm. Yeah,
I'd be interested to see. You know, Logitech did those speakers and like home theater setup where you could drop the PSP in. You know, amongst the speakers. I wonder if that was like remotely successful for them. I doubt it.
Wait, do you mean the two speaker portable deal thing? Or
didn't they have like a? I remember seeing it like a trade show.
It was like a cradle thing.
Yeah, a cradle. You dropped it into.
Oh, okay. I don't think it's something else.
But whenever I see anyone watching stuff on it, it's usually like a TV show or something that they've downloaded or mm-hmm. pulled a torrent, and you know, on the bus or on the ferry on the way to work, you see it, but it's never on a disc.
So, but you know what's sad is it's myopia like Sony gets over things like this that makes you worry about Blu-ray, because here after all that, the guy says, well, we're hoping the format's going to be reinvigorated with next generation capability that may include living room or normal television playback. Hello? You already said that was what you needed in the first place, and they're so myopic, they're like, oh, we'll just relaunch it. No big deal.
The quote from the article that really concerned me was there's a quote from a Universal executive, and I'm just going to paraphrase it because I know we're low on time, where it was something like, the UMD failed, and it's the worst idea Sony's had since Blu-ray, which is really troubling because if Hollywood looks at the UMD, essentially what they're saying is as a failure. How is this same Hollywood going to embrace Blu-ray when Blu-ray, and you said it a second ago that you weren't interested in new formats, is an entirely new format that Sony has to convince people to use? This is a conundrum that Sony definitely needs to take to heart and definitely needs to consider.
Well, I think it was kind of a neck-and-neck horse race up until CES even. And then when they started announcing the prices of the units themselves, I mean, the average price for a HD DVD is going to be $500 and the what the heck is it? Probably twice that for
yeah, Blu-rays.
You're talking about players,
Well, the player, okay.
But again, the game stuff, which is a completely different argument, is they can ship a game that's 25 gig. But on the movie side, I mean, on demand is already cutting into everything, and it's only a matter of time before there's HD on demand. Then why do you need a disc to watch whatever movie you want?
You don't.
Well, you don't, but they're still trying to milk that for as long as they can because, I mean, that's a huge revenue stream for those guys now.
Right. I want to pick up on what Luke said about the public perception thing with Sony. I think he really hit on a good thing there because it stretches back. They kind of have a string of these, we're going to take something and do our own proprietary twist on it, and they don't wind up working out. It started with Betamax, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then they've beaten Memory Stick like a dead horse, but no one else has adopted that. And so if you have a camera, like Skip has this incredibly cool camera, but it's saddled with Memory Stick. So if you don't have a Memory Stick reader or a Sony laptop, then you're very limited in getting your information off your camera and into wherever else you want to look at it.
Mm, yeah.
So Memory Stick, UMD, Beta...
Yeah, for
Blu-ray?
For a brief period of time, I was like a big buyer into the whole thing. I had a Clié, I had a Sony camera.
Forgot about the Clié.
And I would just take the memory cards and swap them back and forth. But it's just you're right. There aren't enough devices.
But at that point, other people were saying they were going to use Memory Stick. Wasn't Panasonic going to use?
Yes, they were.
Other people were going to. And then SD came along, mini SD came along, and everyone jumped on that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and part of the problem they get stuck with is that Magic Gate stuff. They didn't want to share. They didn't want to share their rights management system. They didn't want to share their encryption, and so they cut themselves off from the market again.
They do this every single time. They're so anal about their DRM stuff that they just lock it down themselves, and when they don't share it, everyone else just goes another direction.
And correct me if I'm wrong, Blu-ray's still not locked down, right?
No, isn't that one of the things that was slowing it down?
Right, allegedly, right.
Yeah, that was the reason for the big delay. Just a parallel, like we talked about earlier with Microsoft learning lessons from the PSP, if Microsoft is indeed developing a handheld, I hope that Sony is learning lessons from their past experiences and new forays into media as they're getting ready to launch Blu-ray.
Yeah,
I hope so too. All right, well, the producer man has rolled his finger at me, which means we're on the way out. And no, not that finger. Anyway, Skip does do a great job of keeping up with the message board, so he's watching what you're doing, and we're picking up your questions. We look forward to hearing back from you there. Don't forget to check us on iTunes and give us a little review if you like what you're hearing, or give us some feedback, and we'll work to improve it. And until next week, this is Garnet, and we're out. This has been One Up Yours, a production of the Ziff Davis Game Group and part of the One Up Network. One Up Yours is hosted by Garnet Lee and John Davison, produced by Andrew Pfister and Mike Ng, and is published every Friday afternoon via the iTunes Music Store and from its home at oneup.com.